Yesterday we began discussing how to fill out a ksuba. So you have in front of you today a standard tofes for a standard ksuba. So we'll pick up with roughly where we left off yesterday. We discussed yesterday the dating and the location, and began discussing some issues related to how to write the name of a chassan and kala. In the tofes for the ksuba you see in front of you, you see that the ksuba includes a space for the last name, lemishpachas. So Rav Moshe writes in Chelek Aleph Evan Ezer Simen Kuf Ayin Ches, Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Ayin Ches, that he thinks it's generally a good idea to write a last name in a ksuba as an additional simen. That even though in a get we don't write last names, either because Rav Moshe says either there's a chashash rechoka that maybe we won't write the last name properly, and if you misspell a name, that potentially could possibly in a get. Rabbi Bleich thinks that that's a reason not to write a last name in ksuba either, because maybe you don't know how to write it properly. Or Rav Moshe says that we're worried about innovating things in a get, because people may erroneously think that if you can make that innovation, you can make other innovations, and people who don't know B'tiv Gittin are going to change other things in a get. So that's less of a concern when it comes to a ksuba. The ksuba takes a lot, with a higher threshold of what it takes to pass the ksuba. And so why would you write a last name of the ksuba? As Moshe writes, in a big city where there's a possibility of Shnei Yosef and Shimon Meir, that you have two people with the same name and the same father's name, then we want to make sure that we're able to identify who the chassan is. If there are multiple Yosef and Shimon's by ears, Yosef ben Shimon's by ear, and you can identify this Yosef ben Shimon by his last name, then there's no shaila about his identity. I'm sorry? So then either you have to be mishalish, you have to write the grandfather's name, or when it comes to mamonis, then you can't necessarily be Mosi Mamon, because maybe it's the other person who is a Tavei. But Moshe points out that push comes to shove, even though he thinks it's a good idea to write a last name, it's definitely not ma'akev. Moshe writes a little bit more in Chelek Dalet Simid Mamos Kaf, Chelek Dalet Simid Mamos Kaf, that in any event, even in a big city, it's not so common to have two people with the same name married to two women with the same name. It won't be a problem if there are two Yosef and Shimon's married to two Rachel Bas Yaakovs. And then Rav Moshe says also they have to be around the same age where it would be shy for them to get married. If there are two Yosef and Shimon's in the town and two Rachel Bas Yaakovs, but one of the Yosef and Shimon's is 80, the other Yosef and Shimon is 30, and Rachel Bas Yaakov is 20, so then it doesn't make sense that the 80-year-old would be married to the 20-year-old, and the other 80-year-old would be married to the other 20-year-old. So it's only a potential chashash where you have two people with the same name married to two people with the same name, and in an age bracket where it would be shaykh that they possibly would be getting married to each other. So for all intents and purposes, Rav Moshe says that you don't really have, it's rare to have such a case. He thinks that it's a good idea to write the last name, but definitely not Li'ikuva. And that's Rav Schechter's general preference to write a last name in a ksuba, and that's reflected in this ksuba here. And others say you should write a last name in a ksuba. Rabbi Bleich prefers not to. Rabbi Willig says not to. Because, as Rav Moshe says, you can, maybe you won't write it properly. It's not absolutely necessary. And we don't have to play around with the standard nusach ha-ksuba. Rav Moshe also makes another comment in that same tshuva, Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Ayin Ches, that he says some people are medaktik to write the entire ksuba by hand. So he says there's absolutely no reason to do that. There's no din of lishma when it comes to ksuba. So there's no reason not to have a printed ksuba. You just fill in the blanks, or you could generate the entire thing on a computer and print it all out from top to bottom. Okay. If you have a double name, Reuven Shimon, Chaim Yankel, so the din is in shtaros, this is true in a get, and by extension by ksuba as well, that it's true in Sefer Torah also. And that's this Ekiyah, Sher Ekiyah. That's all one shame. So that's the discussion if that has to be on the same line in a Sefer Torah, because it's all one shame. So in a get, by extension in ksuba, if you have a Chaim Reuven should be on the same line. So you can't have, you shouldn't have Chaim at the end of one line and Reuven at the beginning of the next line. We said yesterday that in terms of transliteration principles, we're not going to go through the details, but one thing, just a general klal that's important to be aware of, is that generally speaking, a Shem Loazi or a Yiddish name ends in an Aleph as opposed to a Tanakhi name that ends in a Hey. So any of the classic Yiddish names where you aren't sure whether it should end in a Hey or an Aleph, it ends in an Aleph. Fei, Gashenu, etc. The other thing that's relevant when it comes to a Shem Tanachi, a name that appears in Tanakh, is as far as Mali and Chaser. So if you have a Shem in Tanakh that always appears Chaser, as most Shemus in Tanakh do, then you write the name Chaser in the Shtar, even if the guy is Chose Mali. So let's say Boaz. Boaz that never appears with the Vav in Tanakh, it's always Beis Ayin Zayin. So even if the guy signs his name Beis Vav Ayin Zayin, in a get, by extension of Ksuba, you'd write Beis Ayin Zayin, because that's a Chasim and Betos. If there's no precedent in Tanakh for spelling it Mali, it's always spelled Chaser, even if the guy spells it Mali, he doesn't know how to spell his name. So that's a Chasim and Betos, you'd write it Chaser. If it's a name that appears in Tanakh both Mali and Chaser, like Binyamin, let's say, so Binyamin sometimes appears with two yuds and sometimes appears with one yud, so then you follow the Chasima. So if the guy is Chose Beis Nun Yud Mem Nun, you write it that way. If the guy is Chose Beis Nun Yud Mem Yud Nun, then you write it that way.
If it's unintentional or intentional, then the correct
spell? Even if it's by unintentional, you mean subconscious.
They know Boaz doesn't have Boaz, but they want if something has Boaz as well.
Meaning even if you intentionally misspell it.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a difference. That's not how you spell the name. So if the guy's name is Boaz and he decides to write the name Mem Shin Hei because he thinks that's how you should spell Boaz, that's a Chasim of Betos, because that's not how you spell Boaz. So it doesn't make a difference if he writes it Mem Shin Hei, or writes it Beis Vav Ayin Zayin. Neither of those are the correct spelling of Boaz. As opposed to Binyamin legitimately could be spelled with one yud or two yud. So if there we follow the Chasima, and then there are klalim for what the default is. Usually the default is going to be the rov. So in the case of Binyamin, the default is with one yud, unless the guy is chosim with two yuds, although I think most Binyamins happen to be chosim with two yuds. Or the other direction, dov. Right? Dov could be mali or chaser. So there the default is that we write dov mali unless he's chosim chaser. So you have to check how things appear in Tanakh. If it appears both ways in Tanakh, then that could be legitimate spelling. Ovadia, Rav Ovadia spelled his name with a Vav, even though I don't believe Ovadia appears Malay anywhere in Tanakh. So Ovadia may be different. I'm not exactly sure why. But I think, I believe that Rav Ovadia spelled his name with a Vav, and I don't believe that it appears that way in Tanakh. The name Penina, there are exceptions to this. The name Penina, we write Penina with a Yud, Pei Nun Yud Nun Hei, even though Tanakh never appears with a Yud, because that's to show that when we use the name Penina, we're not naming after the biblical Penina, because the biblical Penina, the co-wife of Chana, wasn't so nice to Chana, and was punished for that. So we don't name after the biblical Penina. We use the name Penina, it's a different name. So to show that, we don't write it the way it appears in Tanakh. So we write Penina with the Yud, even though it appears in Tanakh without a Yud, to show that that's not the name that we're naming after. Tzipora. So Tzipora, we should have written Sadi Pei Reish Hei, because that appears, doesn't appear as a name in Tanakh, but appears as a word. But we write Tzipora Sadi Pei Vav Reish Hei, we write a Malay to distinguish between that and Sifra. Sifra was an old Jewish name. So Sifra is Tzadi Yud Pei Reish Hei. But if we write Tzipora Tzadi Pei Reish Hei, you could read that as Sifra as opposed to Tzipora. So we write the Vav to indicate that that it's Tzipora, not Sifra. Okay, what happens if the father of the Chasen or Kala is not Jewish and the mother is Jewish? Right, typically you write the father's name and a ksuba. So what do you do if the father's not Jewish? So in Hilchas Gittin, Mi'ikra Adin, in Simon Kuf Kaf Tesif Tes, Kuf Kaf Tesif Tes, we paskin that if you leave out the Shema Av entirely, the gets kosher. If you just write Moshe, you don't write Moshe ben Amram, the gets kosher even if you leave out the father's name. If you make a mistake in the father's name, then according to Rav Yishon and the Apostles, so that's, if you make a mistake in the father's name, that's worse than leaving out entirely. Because that's an incorrect, if you write the wrong father's name, that's worse than writing nothing, because that's not the right person. But you could have said that when it comes to if the father is Nachri, so you should leave out the Shem Ha'av. However, the Dogel Mervava writes there in Kuf Kaf Tes in Eben Ezer that the more correct thing to do if the father is not Jewish and the mother is Jewish. The father's not Jewish, the mother's not Jewish, and the guy's not Jewish, it doesn't make a difference. So the father's not Jewish, the mother's Jewish. So then you should write the mother's name. Just like we have Mari Barachel. Right? Mari Barachel was the son of Issa Giora, and his father wasn't Jewish. It was maybe Harasa Shalab Bagdusha, Belidosa Bagdusha, but it wasn't his biological father, wasn't his halachic father, because at the time of conception the father wasn't Jewish. Fine. So he's identified in the Gemara as Mari Barachel. So you see there the precedent that you can identify someone whose father's not Jewish by the mother. And that's a standard practice when it comes to get, to use the mother's name, and that would be the preferable practice when it comes to a ksuba also, that you write the mother's name. In the Sefer Ksuba Kolchasa, he quotes some svarim that suggest you could write the mother's father's name if that's more comfortable. Then you write, let's say, Moshe ben Avi Imo Yaakov. So you write, if the grandfather's name is Yaakov, you write Moshe ben Yaakov, that's Sheker. That's not true. That's not the right person. But if you write Moshe ben Avi Imo Yaakov, so then that's a true statement, and that's a possibility also. But if you write, in that case, you write Moshe ben Yaakov, that's probably puzzle. That's problematic. That wouldn't be a good clue. Someone recently, there was a chassan of someone in this situation, they were very sensitive, they didn't want to write down the name of the... They didn't want to write the name of the mother to call attention to the fact that that the father wasn't Jewish, and they didn't want to write the grandfather's name in this way, Ben Avi Imo, either. So they just wrote the Ben Yaakov in this case, which is incorrect. And then someone convinced them that better to redo the ksuba, so they redo the ksuba with the proper notation. Even if you if there's some sensitivity, the way it's written, it doesn't necessarily have to be read that way under the chuppah. You can not read it that way, or strategically quaff, or find a way to paper over that. Yeah.
Does Ben meaning grandson in this?
Ben doesn't mean, does not mean
he's
grandson.
The son of his grandfather.
Ben Avi Imo.
Which means he's the son of his grandfather. Isn't that how it translates?
So it would be the son of the mother's father. So obviously it doesn't mean that it's the... Right, so their son means the progeny of, descendant of, correct. Okay, what about an adoptive child? So in Hilchos Gittin, that's a discussion in Poskim. Let's say you realize after the fact that you wrote the name of an adoptive father and again instead of the natural born father. So yes, the person is your father, so they don't think, and they give the name of the adoptive father. But in reality, that's an adoptive father, not a natural-born father. So is that get good, at least, b'di'evit, mokam igun? Is that better than normally a shina b'shema av apostles? If you write the father's name is Yaakov, you write Moshe, that apostles get. But if you wrote the name of the adoptive father, is that better than writing a totally incorrect name? So Baron Gordon was a Rav in the Lower East Side at the turn of the last century. He wrote a number of Svarim on Eben Ezer, including Sefer Eben Meir. He was a Masader Gittin in New York at the beginning of the 20th century. Great-great-grandfather of Rabbi Yaakov Reblasky and Ari Zatz, who work here in Yeshiva. So in the Hakdama to the Sefer Eben Meir, he had a correspondence with the Aruch HaShulchan about a case like this, that in 1907, there was a get that Rabbi Gordon was Masada in New York, and was sent to summer in Europe. And the name of the natural-born father was Leibush. And again, instead of writing Leibush, who was the natural-born father, they wrote Shmuel Leib, which was the adoptive father. And it was impossible to do another get because the husband was in another country, and sorry, the husband was in New York, the wife was in Europe, and then they weren't able to track down the husband again, whatever the maisa was. So the Aruch HaShulchan was makel in that case b'di'evet to rely on the get that had the name of the adoptive father, based on a combination of factors. That number one, there is a sheet in Rishonim that Shina b'shem Av doesn't passel. That is a sheet of the Baal Yetir. We don't passel that way, but at least Malcolm Egan, he said you can add that as a sniff together with other factors. Number two, even if Shina b'shem Av passels, then they only be a psul derabanan. And the Aruch HaShulchan has raya for that, and it's only a psul derabanan. And number three, he says that the Rush explains the reason that Shina b'shem Av passels is because people are going to be under a misimpression. They're going to think it's a different person, not the person who's actually getting divorced. So maybe here it's better because everyone knows, everyone would more readily identify the misgareshes as associated with the adoptive father, not with the natural born father. So here it's not a total shino b'shema av that's baseless. If anything, people may more readily identify this adoptive father as the father of the girl anyway. Okay, and then he points out Sarach Bas Asher, right? The Targum in Parshas Pinchas renders Sarach Bas Asher as Shum Birsa de Eishes Asher Sarach. So Sarach was not Asher's daughter, Sarach was Asher's stepdaughter. And yet the Torah refers to her as Sarach Bas Asher. So you see that referring to an adoptive father as a father has legitimacy. And in this particular case, the Aruch HaShulchan wrote that the difference was between Leib, or Leibish, and Shmuel Leib. So the name's a little bit similar anyway. It's not totally, totally foreign. And maybe the woman doesn't even know what her father's name is, because she's never in Shulti or in Ali anyway. So based on all those factors, a combination of factors, the Aruch HaShulchan was makel b'di'evet b'makom egon, where it's impossible to write another ged, to rely on a ged where they had written the name of the adoptive father instead of the natural-born father. Tshuva Sitz Eliezer Chelik Dalet Simen Kaf Beis. Sitz Eliezer Chelik Dalet Simen Kaf Beis quotes the Aruch HaShulchan and accepts the Aruch HaShulchan lahalacha that you could be makel under these circumstances. He quotes a tshuva the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer Evan Ezer Simen Ayin Vav. Chasam Sofer Evan Ezer Simen Ayin Vav. The Chasam Sofer wasn't talking about Gittin, he was talking about Shtaris in general, but the Maisa was that there was someone who was identified as the son of a certain father. And he ended up marrying another daughter of that father. And Evan was tumulting, how could he marry his sister? And then he said, no, that wasn't my natural born father, that was my adoptive father, and there's no blood relationship. So the Shoel was complaining that if that's the case, then how is it that this guy for all these years was getting aliyahs with the name of the adoptive father and signing shtaros with the name of the adoptive father if that's not his father? So the Chasam Sofer answers that one has nothing to do with the other. So there is a certain recognized relationship between an adoptive father and the adoptive child. So it's not illegitimate to identify yourself on the basis or being related to the adoptive father, even if it's not your halachic or biological father. So the Tzitz Eliezer thinks, well, again, the Chasam Sofer is not talking about a get, but he says, you see from the Chasam Sofer that there is legitimacy to identifying someone on the basis of the adoptive father. Chuvas Divrei Malkiel, Lam Jerav, Chelek Vav Sim Mem Gimel. Chelek Vav Sim Mem Gimel, that's one of the volumes that was published more recently. So he writes, based on this approach, that if they mistakenly wrote the name of the adoptive father in a get, the get is kasher, if you can't receive another get, based on this Chasam Sofer. Especially if, in government documents, the person is identified as the child of the adoptive father. Okay, so that's all b'di'evet. What do you do l'chachila? So that's after the fact. But what's the appropriate way of identifying the father in a case where there is an adoptive father and a biological father in a get. So if we know the identity of the biological father, so then the practice of most Batei Din is we would write the name of the biological father in the get. What happens if we don't know the name? So if we don't know the name, then maybe we should leave it out entirely. That's a din of a shesuki or a sufi. Simon kuf kaf tesef tes. We don't know. That's a classic shesuki. He says, "Who's my father?" Don't ask. So then we don't write the name of the father. We don't write any father. So maybe that would be the acceptable approach. That's what the Minchas Yitzchak writes for Ksuba. Chel hei simen dalid. Chel hei simen dalid Minchas Yitzchak. That if you don't know the identity of the biological father, then leave it out entirely. Just write Moshe Yaakov. You don't have to write Ben anything. In Rabbi Felder's Nachlas Tzvi, page Lamed Dalid, he says that if you don't know the identity of the natural born father, then you could write the name of the adoptive father even lechachila. Because the whole reason we write the name of a father is as a simon. And this guy is identified as a son of the adoptive father. So he thinks that's no worse than leaving out the name of the father entirely, because that's a legitimate simon. Most don't accept that approach, but there is a kind of middle ground. So far, two possibilities are either write the adoptive father without qualification, write nothing. Shuvas Emek Sheila. Mordechai Dov Twersky, the son-in-law of the Tzantarov, the Divrei Chaim. So he writes that you can write the following in a get, but by extension in Ksuba. If you don't know the identity of the natural-born father, you can write Chaim, Demiskeri Chaim ben Avner. That his adoptive father is Avner. So you can write Chaim, who's called Chaim ben Avner. He's not really Chaim ben Avner, because Avner's not his father, but he's associated or he's identified as Avner's son, Sigurei Chaim Demiskeri, Chaim ben Avner. Minchas Yitzchak also has a tshuva, Chelek Vav Simen Kuf Nun Aleph. He says that where there would be a chashash sakana to write the name of the natural born father, what's a chashash sakana? The Kala doesn't know that she's adopted. So she's standing under the chuppah, and she always thought that this is her father's Yaakov. They're standing under the chuppah, they're going to say, "Sorry, Bas Moshe," so she'll faint or worse. So he writes, "Malkum Sakanas Nefashas, Malkum Chashas Sakana," where we're concerned about the mental health of the Kala, who doesn't know that she's adopted, and if you just tell her under the chuppah, she may go crazy. So then you could write this formula of Plonis, the Miskarya. Plonis bas ploni. Rabbi Sandrovic in his Jewish Asei Besamim, Simen Nun Aleph, just notes that it's a little bit more difficult to accept this when it comes to a woman or a man. If it's a man, so the Chaim ben Avner. So he always gets Elias by Chaim ben Avner. So then, in fact, they say Chaim, the mystery of Chaim ben Avner. Chaim is called Chaim ben Avner. But when does a woman ever identify herself as Plonis bas Ploni? She doesn't get Elias usually. So that's a little harder to justify. You're going to call her Sarah, the Miskarya, Sarah bas Avram, and she never gets Elias. So don't ever call her Sarah bas Avram. That's not a true statement. Unless she goes to a conservative temple and gets Elias. Ramosha says that you can write Sarah bas Avraham shegidlasa kevita. Sarah, the daughter of Avraham, who raised her as his daughter. And along those lines, Rav Schwartz or Rav Bezdin told me that the previous Abbas and the brother of Moshe Steinberg, Zichrono Livracha, would sometimes, if you had an adoptive child, write Ploni Hanikra or the mystery, ben ploni hamigadlo, that where you didn't know the identity of the natural born father, it's right, so-and-so, called ben ploni hamigadlo, the son of so-and-so who raised him. So we had that once. We had a guy who came for a get, and he was absolutely insistent that we don't write the name of his natural born father because he held everything in the world against him. He said, if you write the name of the natural born father, he's out. So in that case, we wrote this formulation of Ben Ploni Hamagadlo. Rav Moshe has a slightly different formulation for Ksuba. Evan Ezer Chelek Alu Simen Sadites. Evan Ezer Chelek Alu Simen Sadites. He writes, in Ksuba you can write, Ben Mi Shenishkach Shmo, V'nikra Ben Ploni Shagidlo. You don't know who the natural born father is, so you can write that this is Yaakov Ben Misha Nishkach Shmo, Yaakov, the son of the person whose name we don't remember. Vinikra ben Ploni Shagidlo, known as the son of Shlomo, who raised him. Or Rabbi Bleich has a slightly different formulation. Ploni ben Misha Nishkach Shmo, v'hitzik asmo b'shem Ploni ben Ploni. Ploni, the son of so-and-so, forgot his name, and he's masked himself, he identifies himself as Ploni ben Ploni. Okay, what about a ger gioris? So then we write ben Avram Avinu or bas Avram Avinu. Okay, let's go back to the nusach haktuba. B'sheni b'shabbos tosha yamim lechodesh er shnas chamishis alafim shvam yosef shem teisha b'yis olam the minin shonim kan b'New York. So in the standard ksuba it says, Eich Shachasa. Rav Schechter has a slightly different nusach haksuba that was generated when Dr. Richard Steiner, who was a professor in Revel for many years, now retired, married off his oldest daughter. He realized that there are certain syntactical errors in the Aramaic and the Ksuba, and he wanted to rewrite or redo the Ksuba to fix those errors. So in consultation with Rav Schechter, he made certain changes to the Nusach Ksuba, and that's what's known as Rav Schechter's Ksuba, which you can get a template of. So one of the corrections that Rav Schechter added in his Nusach Ksuba is putting an Anan Sadi here. Because what does it mean? V'sheni v'shabbos, and the date, the Minyan Shana come in New York, there's something missing. How the chasa? Well, it's Anan Sadi. We're saying Eidus. That's the standard Lashon Eidus, right? So Rav Schechter adds in Anan Sadi that we are saying Eidus, which is what the Eidim are signing on, that this happened. So that, I mean, that's not Rav Schechter's innovation. That appears in earlier Ksuvos as well, but it's left out of the more standard version. Yes, in the Mishpat Ksuva. Mishpat Ksuba is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 volume work on Hilchos Ksubos, which I recommend if you have a few extra minutes reading through. So, authored by Rav Eliyahu Bar Shalom, who recently became the chief rabbi of, I think, Kfar Saba, after his father passed away. He spent the Shabbos in Passaic this year. He's a fascinating person. So he just records here in the Mishpat Ksuba Perek Yud Ches that he thinks Anan Sadi should be included because that's what the Eidim are citing on, but in the standard versions it's missing. Why? So he says maybe the reason is that we don't want to write a Nusach that gives you the impression that they're only Eidim today. Because you can read it narrowly, as on such and such a day we are Edom. So is this the only day that you're ever Edom? So maybe it is. So he thinks maybe that's how the words got deleted. Sephardi ksubas have an ansadi, Ashkenazi ksubas don't have an ansadi, they just have eich. And he says it doesn't appear in the earlier ksubas, doesn't appear in Rav Haigon's ksuba, the Machzor Vitri, the Raviyah, the Rambam, Tashbetz, Ran. And maybe there are reasons for that. Quotes the Raviyah, that even though Shtaros begin on Ansadi, to show that the Edom are saying Edus on that which appears, in Shtar Ksuba you shouldn't write that, because Ksuba is super Edus. It's a Tznai Bezdin. It's not just a Hischaivus Midas. It's not that just the person decides on his own that he's being Mischaiv in this. Even if he didn't decide on his own, Bezdin is Mechaiv him. So it's not only on the basis of the Edus, it's a Chiyuv that exists anyway. But it's also not a Maisa Bezdin, it's not signed by Dayanim. So that's why we don't write on Ansadi. Or, he quotes in the Tashbetz, that since in the Ksuba we write the date at the beginning, so that's what we just said, that if you write on Ansadi, maybe Mashma, they're only Edim on this date. He says, Lamaisa, all the Achronim and the Ashkenaz leave out on Ansadi. They just have Eich. And that's Minhag b'nei Ashkenaz ad Hayom. And that's what you have in Italian Ksubas also. But the Sfardim of Ansadi, we find that going back more than 100 years. He quotes the Nar Mitzrayim and other Sfarim of later times, but he says it doesn't appear anywhere we showed him till he found in the Tshuvas Binyamin Zev Siman Nun, he has a nusach of a ksuba of Me'idin Anu, which is Hebrew for Anansadi. So he's happy that he found the makor and we showed him. Okay, so he seems to demonstrate that all the Rishonim, there's no use of Anansadi. The later Sfardi, Sfarim have Anansadi, so he's a Sfardi, so he says he should write Anansadi. But Rosh Hefter, who's not a Sfardi, also thought that Anansadi is more correct, so he added that into his Ksuba. Okay, now the first time the name of the chassan appears in a ksuba, we generally don't write chassan. If you look in the later times, the later blanks, there we have chassan denan. And the first time it doesn't say chassan. And also, the first time the kal's name appears, we don't write maras. And the later times, we write maras. The Ksuba Kalchasi quotes that some had a nusach of writing Habacher the first time. Which Rav Shechter has. And the RCA Madrich, they have a chasan the first time too. Not sure why. Okay. So Eich, or Anansadi Eich, Shachasan, Ploni, Lemishmachas, Blank, Amr, Lala, Dab, Sulta, Havilil, Intu, Gdas, Moshe, Mishral, Vyana, Eflach, Okir, Ve'ezim, Farnes, Asich, Elich, Yehuch, Skuvin, Yudan, etc. Now, Mor bisulaychi kasef zuzi masan. Dechazi lichi midaraisa. So we're not going to spend time now on the lusach of chazi lichi midaraisa. Does that mean ksuba deraisa? Maybe even if ksuba is drabanan, there's still a hischaivus midaraisa, or maybe chazi lichi midaraisa refers to the coins used. So that we don't have time to go into, but that's a separate topic. So the amount of ksuba for besula is masayim zuz. For gush of almana, it's a mana. A giyores is also a mana. Giyores in iskayra p'chusa mi gimel shanim yom echad is masayim. This is all the beginning of Simen Samach Zayin in Eben Ezer. Besula shen es amun on iskarsha o nachlet samin erisim v'nisei subas masayim. This amina niskarshin is chalsam in suin cheskas beula ein la alamana giyaris vashu yashivcha shenivshiv niskarim shtach pachas bas gimel shalom yimechad ksubas masayim. Okay. The Rama notes simin samach vav seif yud aleph. First, Kishaav Kayim, Umesi Bita, when the father is alive, marrying off his daughter, Kosvim Adin and Adunya Dahanala Slami Beavua. So that's the next line of the Ksuba. Svias Maras Chainasara Besulta Da, Havazel Into Adin Adunya Dahanala Slami Bay. So for a besula now married before her father married her off, it's mibay avua. Kesheena avkai, there's no father, kos bin mibay nasha. Then we write mibay nasha. Then the Rama writes, b'ksubas grusha, kos bin matrachta. So the ksuba of a besula, first marriage, you write, mor bisulaychi. If she's an almana, we write matrachta instead of besulta. Amar la lahada, not besulta, but matrachta. Kedei sheyedu she grusha v'sula kanim. Because we have to identify, ksuba is used to identify a person's eligibility for remarriage down the road. So if she's already a grusha, we have to be able to identify that she's a sula kanim. So we use a different term to flag that. Okay, what about the ksuba of a ba'ula who wasn't married before? So Bishmuel writes in Simon Sifkat and Cafe, Samach Vav Cafe, Imi ba'ula, Kosvin ba'ulta. Imishvuya kosin shvuya. So if you're going to write ba'ulta, you don't necessarily have to read that, because that's not so flattering. The others write itisa, itisa da. It's the woman. So that flags the fact that it's not basula, but you're not highlighting the fact that she's ba'ula. Piskei Tshuva, Sifkat and Ches, quotes, possibility of writing Arusa. However, as far as Masayim, so even a Be'ula, you could write Masayim, even though Nikar Adin, Yoli Mechuyev Amana, because as is Chayiv is Midas, the Chasim can be Mischayiv at every once, as far as the Ksuba, even if he's not required to do that, Nikar Adin. Rabbi Bleich quotes the Shuvas Chasim Sofer, Simon Kuf Lamed Gimel, who writes that when it comes to Bulas Atzmo, a couple that was living together before the marriage, now they're having Chuppah V'Kiddushin, So Chav Sofer writes that his minhag was to write Masayim. So Rav Lash just points out his minhag was, it sounds like this didn't just happen once. Even in Pressburg in the 1800s, this was not an uncommon occurrence, a Chuvah V'Kiddushin for a Bulas Atzmo. Okay. Ksuba Kol Chasa, Perakit Aleph, Sifkat Beis, suggests writing it to Sada. The footnote says, some allow you to write Basulta, because as far as you're concerned, you treat it as a Basula. And there Rabbi Bleich just points out that if it's common knowledge that she's not a Basula, then you don't want to write... you don't want to write sheker, or even if it's not common knowledge, if you know that that's not the case, so you don't want to write sheker in a ksuba. For giores, we write giorta. So esha chasan ploni amar la lahada giorta. Although where there's a sensitivity, there would be a legitimacy or grounds to write itisa instead of giorta. Even if I isasa, you would still have to identify this person as Bas Avraham Avinu, because you do need to identify that she took giores because of the kahuna ramifications. But if it makes someone feel better about isasa over giorta, that is a possibility. What about a giores whose mother was not Jewish, father was Jewish, wants to write the name of the natural-born Jewish father, but it's not her lucky father because she wasn't Jewish. So Rabbi Reis suggested that you could write the following, if there's a sensitivity and you want to. Giorta, so that flags the fact that she's a Gioras. Giorta Sara. Dimiskarya Sara Bas Yaakov. So she's a Gioras, or she's Sara. And she's called Sarah Bas Yaakov. She's not Sarah Bas Yaakov because Yaakov's not her halachic father. But it's her natural father, and she identifies as the father's daughter. So it would not be incorrect to write Giorta Sarah Dimiskarya Sarah Bas Yaakov, or the flip side, or the same end result, would be if you wrote something like Itisa Sarah Bas Avraham Avinu Dimiskarya Sarah Bas Yaakov. So you're identifying, the fact that you're using Bas Avraham Avinu identifies her as a GRS. She wants to include the name of her natural born father, so you could do that without compromising the identity as a GRS. Again, Sarah, or Sarah, Bas Avraham Avinu, Dimiskarya, Sarah Bas Asher. Okay. What about a Grusha who's also an Almana? So Amani, you write Armelasa. Grusha, you write Matrachta. So do you have to write both if you have a woman who was previously both widowed and divorced? Do you have to write both Matrachta and Armelasa? Piskei Tshuva Simen Samach Vav Sivkat and Ches. Piskei Tshuva Simen Samach Vav Sivkat and Ches. Quotes the Tshuva Sarad Vaz. Similar Shaila, a Gioras who was divorced and now she's getting remarried. So he writes, you can pick your poison. You can either write that she's a giorta, you can write that she's a matrachta. You don't have to write both, because she's going to be a surah lekohen regardless. She's a surah lekohen because she's a giorta, she's a surah lekohen because she's a grusha. But once you identify or flag one of those statuses, then you don't add anything by flagging the second. So the Ritvaz writes, the whole reason they have to identify in a ksuba is to prevent Isser LeKohen. But as long as you prevent that, you don't have to add additional information if it's not going to be of consequence as far as the woman's eligibility to remarry. But he thinks that it's still, the Ritvaz thinks that you should write Gioras Dafka. Because maybe she'll end up marrying a ger, and there they're nafka mina. If a gioris marries a ger, then the daughter can, marry a kohen. So if you're going to write that she's a gioris, you don't have to write that she's a grusha, because there's no situation of consequence that's added by the fact that she's a grusha. But if you write a grusha and not a gioris, then if someone doesn't know she's a gioris, she may end up marrying a ger and have a daughter who's going to be a Sula Kohen that we wouldn't know. So the Rav says that for that reason, you have to write GRS, but you don't have to write Grusha. And when it comes to an Alman and a Grusha, the Rav says, you have to write Grusha because Almana is Muteris HaKohen, but once you write Grusha, you don't have to write Almana as well. So if you just write Almana, you know that she's a Surah Kohen. If you write Grusha, you know that she's a Surah Kohen. So there's nothing added by writing Almana as well. Okay? That's what the Ritvaz writes going to Piskei Tshuva. Sefer Ksuba Kolchasa, Perek Yud Aleph, Seif Kav Zayin, Yud Aleph Kav Zayin, quotes to the Nachla Shiva, that you should write both. You should write Matrachta Plonis Bas Ploni, Tahavis Armelasa, that she's a divorcee who was also an Almana. And by Giores, Giorta Tahavis Matrachta. Rav Shechter thought that was more correct, that you should write both, even though it's not there isn't necessarily a compelling Svara to do that. Okay. One of Rav Shechter's other emendations so the Shibudim Archal on the Chasim in the Chasim's possession now and the chassid that will come into possession later. So about six or seven lines before the end of the text, the nedunya dein v'tasefta da minai v'afilim and glima da'akaspai, even the shirt off my back, b'chayai u'baser chayai. So Rav Shechter changes that to b'chayai u'baser mosi. What does it mean, in my life and after my life? It means when I'm dead, after I'm dead. So that's a little bit of a lashon hakiyah to say b'chayai u'baser chayai. But Rav Shechter changes that to B'chaye B'baser Mosi. Okay, where one other thing important when filling out any shtar or exub included is if there are spaces that are left blank. I mean, let's say in the third line, you're writing the name of the chassan, or so you're writing the name of the city. So the Min Shonim Kan New York. So New York doesn't take that whole line. So when you fill out a shtar, if there's extra space that's not filled in, you have to be metayit, meaning you have to draw a line through the middle of that line to ensure that no one can come and be mizayif and add extra information post chasimas. Otherwise, you're going to have a shtar that you have a schayvis for $100, and if there's a space, someone's going to add in $1,000 and $100. So when it comes to shtaras, you have to be metayet extra spaces. Okay, you have to do a Kabbalah's Kinyan in advance of signing the Ksuba. And the Sefer Ksuba Kol Chasi quotes from the Shevet HaLevi that you should use for the Kinyan Sudar, you should use the siddur of one of the Eidei Ksuba, not of the Mesader Kiddushin, based on Asma, and that's the mashmas of the Kanina Minei, that it's from the siddur of the Eidim. That's what he writes about the Rav Osner de Lechachila, but in practice, I believe that common practice is to use the siddur of the Mesader Kiddushin. Now, in the Hilchos Shtaros in general, Chosha Mishpat Simen Mem Hei Sif Beis, Chosha Mishpat Simen Mem Hei Sif Beis, if Eidim sign a shtar, they have to read the shtar before they sign it. Any attorney would tell you that as well, that you should read something before you sign it. Common sense. Shach quotes in Sifkatan Beis from some Rishonim that if someone else reads it for you, that doesn't work. Shachad Aruch is matir. Let's say the A doesn't read the shtar himself, someone reads it for him, and he trusts the person reading it that he's reading it accurately. That's a machlokas Yishonim where that works. Shachad Aruch says it does. Shach is skeptical, but it's a good idea to good idea. The Eidim should read the Ksuba before they're signing, because you should always read something before you sign it. I was once an Eid Ksuba at a wedding where the Messiah of the Kedushin was a member of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, and he was getting a little bit annoyed that I was insisting on reading the Ksuba before signing it. Not sure why. But even though the Messiah of the Kedushin gets annoyed at you, you should still read the Ksuba before you sign it.
Wow.
The Ramah writes in Simen Samach Vav Se'if Yud Gimel, Simen Samach Vav Se'if Yud Gimel, Am Aretz Sheba Lagarish the Amar Acherkaf Shelo Haven Masha Yakosta B'Tinaimo B'Ksuba Einu Naman. So now Amar Aretz comes and he says, I didn't realize what I was getting myself into when I signed the Ksuba. I'm not paying. Einu Naman. Devadai ha'edim lo chasmu mashalo hi'idu b'fanav t'chil al-peh. The Edim definitely wouldn't have signed unless they made sure that the chasen knows what he's getting into. Jew is a rashba. So you see from there, apparently, that it's the responsibility of the Edim, not just in the Masada Kedushin, but the responsibility of the Edim to make sure that the chasen knows what he's signing. So if you're an Edim, I'm sorry?
Most Edim don't know that though, so is that not true?
So you're saying that's a questionable umdana nowadays? Maybe. You say the Edim themselves are amratzim. Maybe. So then, it should at least default to the Masada of Kedushin, that it's the Masada of Kedushin's responsibility. There at least, that should be an umdana chazaka, that a Masada of Kedushin wouldn't have his chasen sign, or wouldn't have the ksuba signed, creating this chayvus of chasen, because they know he's getting into. It's also important for prenups, not that we're not going to have time to talk about it, but halachic prenup should be signed in advance of the wedding so that everyone can have proper time to read it over and understand what they're signing, which is a good idea for any shtar that's being signed. Also in Hilchos Shtar, it's Koshe Mishpat, Simen Mem Hei Sifav. Simen Mem Hei Sifav, it says that the Edim cannot be Marchik Menatzav more than the space of two lines. I mean, usually the signatures should be within one etzba of the last line of the shtar, and if there are two etzbas between the last line of the shtar and the signatures, that's ma'akiv. So you can't have, because then you can add more information into the shtar. So you have to make sure that the lines for the chasimos are close enough to the actual end of the text of the document. Okay, what about last names for the Edim? So Ksuba Kolchasa Periches Arulam and Gimel says that most places of Minig is not to use last names. They quote Rav Shlomo Zalman that Rav Shlomo Zalman did use last names for the Chasen Kala, but not for the Edim. Rav Shechter has the Edim write last names. Rabbi Willig has the Edim not write last names. Different practices. Rabbi Willig points out that if you're a Masada Kedushin and the Edim are signing the Ksuba don't know how to sign their names, so you should have them practice on a piece of paper as a sample before they sign the actual Ksuba to make sure they know how to sign their name. And our minhag is that you have the word Ne'um prior to the Chasimos of the Edim on the Ksuba. Okay. So all the regular psulei edus that we have a chol Torah kula apply to a ksuba as well. Chashim mishpat simul amagimel krovim psula machmas aveira. That all applies. What degree of korva passes for a ksuba? So meikir adin sheni b'sheni is. Asir. Sheni Misheni means a first cousin. Second degree relationship, first cousins. Shlishi Berishon is a machlokas, so we definitely avoid that. Shlishi Berishon would be like a great uncle and a great nephew. What about a Sheni B'Sheni with two Balka Ishtos, meaning first cousins through their wives? You have two first cousins, two female first cousins are married to their respective husbands. So the respective husbands are a Sheni B'Sheni with two Balka Ishtos. So that the Ramah asks in general for Edus. You can have a Sheni B'Sheni even with two Balka Ishtos, so first cousin with two Balka Ishtos. When it comes to Edei Kedushin, so Rishakta points out that some are Chonim or Machmer for Edei Kedushin and Edei Get up to a Revi B'Revi with two Balka Ishtos. That would be third cousins through marriage. The Osar Poskim, Simen Mem Bei Sivkatan Mem Hei. Simen Mem Bei Sivkatan Mem Hei Os Tesvav. He quotes some Achronim who suggest that a Shadchan is possible to be an Eid Kedushin where he hasn't been paid the Shachanus Geld yet, because that's a Psul Nogeya, that he has a vested interest in the wedding taking place because he stands to gain financially if they're going to get married. He's going to get paid the Shachanus Geld. And the Sefer Ksuba Kolchasa suggests that maybe that should apply to Eidei Ksuba also, because you have a vested financial interest in them getting married, and the Ksuba facilitates that. So maybe a Shachan should be possible to be an Eidei Ksuba. I don't believe that we're makbid on that. I've been an Eidei Ksuba on more than one occasion for couples that we were the Shachanim for, and I don't believe that we're so concerned about them. Could be our system of Shachan is a little bit different. Okay. In Persia, the practice was, I discovered this through looking at some Persian ksubas from the 70s, 60s. There weren't that many full Shomrei Torah mitzvahs in Tehran in the years before the revolution. But I noticed the practice there was that you had a million chasimas on a ksuba. So the Beis Shmuel makes reference to this. Beis Shmuel, Simen Samach Vosef Katan Koches. Samach Vosef Katan Koches. And in some places, they had psulim sign the ksuba after the Edim Sherim Mishim Kavar. That's, you had the two kasher Edim, and then you had a million other chasimas all around the page. That was some kind of kibud, extra kibudim to honor people at the wedding, even krovim. So you have all these chasimas flying and all haphazardly around the ksuba. Okay. We should talk for a few minutes about the institution of a ksuba de irkasa, a lost ksuba. Because the din is, the Gemara has in ksubas nun vav amibayz nun zayin amin aleph, achse de rabbi, the Rami Bar Chama havas nesiva l'Rav Avya. So Rami Bar Chama's sister is married to Rav Avya. Irkas ksuba, so she lost her ksuba. We did a get sometime in the last year or two of a woman who brought a ksuba, and she told us how the ksuba had been stolen, and someone found it on eBay for sale, and they got it back that way. But that wasn't what happened with Rami Brachama's sister. She lost her ksuba, plain and simple. Also, the comment of Rav Yosef, Amr Lei Hachi, Amr of Yehud, Amr Shmuel, Zu Diver Meir. So Rav Meir says, Aser Lishos Es Ishto Below Ksuba. You're not allowed to remain married to a kolapochis of ksuba assigned l'madam mana reisu b'glasnos. You're not allowed to remain married to your wife without a ksuba. And Chamim argue, what's the reason for the issue for a mayor? Rashi explains, kari la b'glasnos mishun de la samcha daita, that there's a lack of smichas das if you're not going to have a ksuba. So the woman thinks that she can be divorced at will, without any financial consequence to the husband. So then that's a chisara in inner smichus das, that the marriage should be proper, and that's ke'ilu bilas nos. So for that reason, you're not allowed to remain married without a ksuba. That's the institution of Ksuba, the Erkasav. Ksuba was lost. You have to redo it. There's a little bit of discussion that the Mishpat Ksuba has. Chelek Zayin, Perek Nun Zayin. He quotes some Svarim from Egypt 100 years ago, the Nar Shalom and others, Nar Shalom, Neve Shalom, Nar Mitzrayim, that the practice there in Cairo was that they'd have a backup tzuba, which they kept in the pinkas of the kehila. Number one, that in case a tzuba would be lost, then that could be the replacement. And if there's any shaila about what the tzuba actually said, they'd have the backup. And that's what they do in Eretz Yisrael. The Rabbanut keeps a copy of every tzuba. I'm sorry? Didn't say that. That's a problem. You can't have two shtaras that are both betokeh for the same mischaivus, right? So in the Rabbanut, it's a copy. It's not another original. In Egypt, it sounds like it was another original, maybe. But that's a problem. So some object to that because you can't have two shtaras for the same chov. It's a gemara of Basar Kusam Chesam and Beis. And it's questionable whether that's effective anyway if it's only a copy. So the Ksuba Kolchasa quotes from Rav Yashiv that as far as the Issa Shehiyah below Ksuba, you're not allowed to rely on the copy.
Couldn't you somehow rely on that, that if this is used, the other one's invalid, that only...
That if this one is used, you mean the other way around, that if this
reference
one is lost,
that...
I'm sorry?
Reference the other one on it.
Not sure. You have to figure out, you have to go through the Sugya of Bava Basra and get Pasha and see if you could accommodate the Gemara there. I'm not sure. You have to work on that. But that's a machlokas among contemporary poskim, whether there's what to rely on from a copy found in the Rabbanut to avoid the problem of Shia B'lok Suba. But bottom line, definitely l'chachila, even if you have a copy, if a ksuba is lost, you should do a ksuba d'erkasa. So there, ksuba d'erkasa is its own nusach, ksuba d'shtaka pata'usa is its own nusach. If there's a mistake in the ksuba, a fatal mistake, that needs to be redone. The Mishpat Ksuba suggests that maybe you should really tailor every... He complains that the fallback option is that anything happens to ksuba, you write a ksuba d'erkasa. He says, why should that be? If a ksuba is burnt, you shouldn't write a ksuba there because that's not lost, it's burnt. You should write that it's burnt. So he says, he discusses with Chaim Kanievsky, and Chaim said, no, that the default is ksuba there because that means any situation in which it's no longer around. So he doesn't like that. He says, maybe you should have a tailor-made nusach for every situation, but the general practice is, you write a ksuba there because if a ksuba is in any way inaccessible. Now, is there a situation in which you create that l'chachila? You know, there's an issue with the ksuba, so you rip it up, and now it's definitely erkasa. But where it is lost, then a ksuba the erkasa is in order, and that should be done immediately because of the iser of b'masha ishto below ksuba. I was at a wedding about a year ago, and the Rabbi Willie pulled me aside before the chuppah. He said that one of the siblings of the Chasam Nakala discovered that they lost Iksuba, so you have to do Iksuba Derkasa now. So we did Iksuba Derkasa, and we both signed it, and then Rabbi Willig was mechubed with Kriyas Iksuba under the chuppah for that wedding. So I said to Rabbi Willig, it's probably the only time that they were mechavid you for two Iksubas at the same wedding. One other point that I neglected to mention earlier is that if you're Misad or Kedushin, you should always have backup copies of the Ksuba handy. Generally speaking, it's the more money people spend on a fancy Ksuba, the more likely it is that there'll be a psul that you'll have to rip it up and use a $2 paper version. That's why it's not so advisable to have a fancy Ksuba. Okay, we'll stop here. This concludes our Shiurim on Ishus.